Intermittent fasting is an eating pattern that cycles between periods of eating and fasting. So fed and unfed.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture. Adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. What's up, Rebel? Today, I am kicking off a very special series. If you have been on my social media, my @KayleeLoren page, and you're in my broadcast channel, Daily with Kaylee, you were polled on which diet style that I have tested on myself you wanted to learn about. And I was really surprised, actually, to see everybody's answers. Because, you know, some of them I thought I would get a lot more curiosity than others, but I won't exactly share that unless you're in that page and you already know. But I am still going to talk about each and every one of the specific eating styles and diets that I have tested out personally on myself, because ever since I started in this industry, I've been a big supporter of, you know, firsthand experience, enriching my understanding of the science behind something. And a lot of people, you know, especially, you know, specific practitioners for different things, you know, they usually just understand the literature or what they've been taught or whatever pamphlet's been handed to them about how to discuss certain things about eating. Majority of us have been to our doctor. They are not nutritionists. They do not spend much time more than like a day or 30 minutes, even according to my friends who recently graduated from medical school. They don't spend more than that amount of time on nutrition, unfortunately, for most general practitioners. However, they are still counseling us on our health and who's the first person we go to when something's going wrong with our health, or they run our physicals and then they're like, stuff is wrong. They will almost always say, follow a Mediterranean diet, increase your movement more, eat less, move more. And there's a ton of nuance to life. You know, if you are on social media, but you're on one right now listening to this podcast, you're getting exposed to a ton of different concepts and theories and perspectives and, you know, all these different things around anything in the health world. And you want to navigate that best, right? So what this series is going to highlight is my personal experience when trying out these eating styles. And most of these eating styles I did for minimum 30 days, but maximum 90 days. And these were really interesting and insightful, and they definitely helped me and have helped me help my clients navigate kind of all the little nuanced things that a lot of people don't talk about or experience. Or to hear that, you have to really be diving into the rabbit hole of people who teach or follow these eating styles. So first thing I do want to say, though, is that you do not have to follow any of these eating styles to achieve optimal health. You can absolutely, and I personally don't, like I personally do not follow any of these eating styles for my day-to-day because they're rigid. They honestly, most of them are actually beneficial mainly for nutritional interventions. Nutritional interventions are times where you need to align your nutrition therapeutically with a health concern that you're experiencing. So for me, I have found that these have been really powerful therapeutic interventions for, you know, pre-diabetic or PCOS, or, you know, some people frequently use ketogenic diets for seizures. If you're somebody who has any sort of reactions that in your brain that you need to have a more balanced space. I don't want to get into the science too much with it, but the ketogenic diet was originally developed for people who had seizures. And so there's a lot of very amazing, fascinating uses for specific eating styles, removing certain food groups from eating styles for different reasons. And, you know, there's a lot of misinformation nowadays. So I also hope in kind of sharing these experiences with you, I am going to briefly discuss a little bit about the science and the history and the modern take on each of these diets, because we have had a lot more, you know, the last several years, it was all about keto, it was all about paleo, you know, aka Whole30 and stuff is kind of in line with paleo, and all about carnivore this last few years. And, you know, that is the most recent diet intervention that I have tested out on myself. And I have lots of very interesting stuff to say about carnivore that I would not have had without experiencing it myself. So stay tuned for next episode, because I will be discussing carnivore next episode on 103. But today in 102, we are discussing intermittent fasting, which isn't specifically a diet, it's an eating style. So that's why I kind of clarify in the beginning that I'm going to be discussing diets and eating styles, because a lot of people think intermittent fasting is a dieting method, when in reality, diet means the food you eat. What exactly are you eating? What are you allowed to consume or whatever? Eating style is more like parameters or a methodology to it. Okay, so hopefully that kind of helps you differentiate between the two. But today, intermittent fasting is an eating style, and I am going to be more specifically talking about what is called the lean gains method, which is a 16-8 eating window, eating and fasting window. That's just one of the terms they call for it. There's several other ones. We're going to talk more about those here in a bit. But I just want to specifically say that what I followed and what I'm referring to is the most common fasting style, which is the 16-8. But before we dive in, I do want to remind you that throughout all of these episodes, while I am a certified nutritionist, fitness professional of over a decade, and currently in a clinical nutrition program for my master's, I am not a doctor or a licensed medical professional yet. But even if I were, on this podcast format, everything I share in this episode is based on my personal experience and general knowledge. So it's meant to educate you and inspire you, not to diagnose or treat any condition. So intermittent fasting, like any dietary change, can affect everyone differently, especially for women with specific health needs. So you do always need to consult with your doctor or a qualified healthcare provider before making major changes to your eating habits or your lifestyle, because, you know, your health is unique. What works for me may not be right for you. And that is absolutely something I've seen across the hundreds of clients I've worked with over the years, is that pretty much nobody is exactly the same. So it's really important for you to better understand exactly where your health is at before making these different lifestyle changes, because nutrition is therapy, food is medicine, and it can, you know, help you or poison you. And you do also need to know that just because an eating style or a diet is touted as healthy or whatnot, whatever you see online, it may not be for you specifically, okay? So this is really important for you to understand, and I need to say this in each of these episodes because that is super key, all right? So also go to the show notes for any of the ways you want to connect with me further. Join our community. Our newsletter link is there as well. You can sign up on my website. We have a one-time-a-month health and wellness newsletter, and we are putting out episodes so far this season every other Monday, just in case you missed it and you didn't know. We will probably return to weekly here soon, but while I am doing my full-time master's program and also still working with my business part-time, it's just a better flow for us. So, all right, I hope that you guys enjoy this episode. Let's talk about intermittent fasting. Okay, so a little background on when I first got exposed to intermittent fasting. One of my ex-boyfriends was also a big fitness fanatic. We met in college while going through the kinesiology program together, and he was all about the biohacking thing. Like, I have never been so exposed to biohacking stuff until I dated this guy. And I mean, he was talking about oil pulling and all these random little things for years before they've become so popular on social media lately. But a lot of people, honestly, in the biohacking community, like the OG people, have been doing this for decades. Like, it's not new. It's just that social media has really proliferated the exposure, that's for sure. So when we tried, when I tried intermittent fasting, I was exposed to it in 2016. And I remember, you know, kind of being in a phase in life where I was doing all the things. Like, I was finishing college with tons of credits, started my training business, you know, was just on the ground running, doing all the things, doing the most, distracting myself from life because there was definitely some big traumatic things that had happened for me the year prior to that. And, you know, I include that because it's very important background on why I tried this eating style and wanted to have control over my eating. So this was something where, you know, I would definitely recommend if you're somebody with an ED history to really be careful of things like intermittent fasting. That is a huge disclaimer that I really want to say right off the bat. There's not enough discussion around how women who restrict their eating in general use something like, oh, well, I'm following intermittent fasting, and they're using it in a way to kind of fancy diet wash their eating disorder. And that's really common. I've actually even had a few clients in the past do that without, you know, discussing with me their history. Honestly, you know, I always discuss this stuff with my clients, but then they don't necessarily tell me when, you know, in high school or something like that, they struggled with bulimia or anorexia. And so this is really important. If you've ever struggled with an eating disorder and you still, or you do still struggle with one, I do not recommend intermittent fasting because it may trigger you or put you back into that mindset of, I can't eat during this amount of time. Okay, so if you have a healthy relationship with food and eating times and you need to like reel it in, maybe you've had an unhealthy relationship in the sense where you just snack too late at night and this or that, intermittent fasting can be a really great tool for kind of reeling it in and keeping your eating window controlled. Okay, but again, if you're somebody who struggles with controlling food, this is not a good thing for you. So for me, I would say that I didn't necessarily have significant eating disordered past. I'd partaken in a few things that you do as a girl in high school. But when I did this, it was more I wanted to control something because a lot of things in my life were out of control. There was so much going on. And so for me, when this boyfriend of mine had introduced it to me, I was like, yeah, let's do this together. Like, cool, whatever. And the first 4 weeks were great. Okay. Like, I'd say that I was like, I actually attribute, I don't know if I want to say necessarily healing, but rebalancing my hypoglycemia. Basically, I would have major blood sugar spikes and drops to where I physically could feel, you know, it felt very pre-diabetic. And I have a lot of diabetics in my family, all type 2, meaning lifestyle related. So I was very concerned, even though I was a little fitness girly and I was, you know, at least 10 pounds lighter than I am today, I still was experiencing these major blood sugar drops and these major blood sugar spikes. So no one is safe from prediabetes or diabetes, okay? It's very important to understand, especially nowadays with our lifestyles, our stress mismanagement, plus our eating, no matter how you look physically, if you're not keeping track of what your fasting glucose and insulin and your A1C is, as an adult, you really should, especially if you're physically experiencing blood sugar spikes and drops like that, where you can tell and you're hangry or you're very hangry. You know, being hangry is so commonplace, but it is not normal. You shouldn't be feeling mood changes with when you are eating or when you have not eaten. Okay. And so I used to get a lot of those things. And I definitely attribute intermittent fasting to helping rebalance that for me because I had just been eating very haphazardly. Even though it was healthier foods, it still was kind of all over the place. And there'd be like a Starbucks or a Dutch Brothers thrown in there and, you know, college snackies because, you know, you're running from class to class and you're like, you know, this donut looks good or whatever. And being a fitness girly, it was like, it didn't really matter because I was always exercising and strength training. So I was like, eh, you know, but I still was experiencing those blood sugar things. So shifting to an eating window, which I will talk more about here in a moment, really helped line, and that's one of the things that IF, so intermittent fasting, I'm going to refer to it as IF throughout this because it's such a long word. IF was really beneficial for me for getting my blood sugar under control. And that was one of my favorite things that I got from following it so strictly for several months. But I will say that it also had quite a few negative things that I experienced. But many things that I learned through this phase that I had done with IF, I have actually implemented into my day-to-day life casually. And a lot of us may actually already be following like a 16-8 eating window already and not even realize it. There was this old kind of phrase that I remember learning in like middle school or high school, where most women would be like, stop eating after 7 or stop eating after 8, blah, 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 blah. Does that ring a bell? I would be surprised if you didn't hear that growing up from somebody. But essentially what that was is, you know, most of us wake up around then 7. So if you stop eating at 7 and then you start eating again at 7, that's a natural fasting window. So for me, I was doing real good. You know, week 4, feeling great. Week 5, hit a wall. Felt like crap. Had no idea what was going on besides understanding that I was following a different eating style and perhaps that was it. So good old little Kales, as she does, was researching it and trying to figure it out. Now, back in 2016, there was hardly even any more research on female bodies, especially premenstrual female bodies, in the literature, because female bodies were very much still, like, it's only more recent, guys, that a lot of us premenstrual women, aka women who are still naturally cycling, are getting studied and researched for things, because we are kind of medical curveballs. Because our hormones can be all over the place from female to female to female. Many of us don't have the same exact cycle length. Many of us may be on birth control or not. Many of us might have PCOS and the other doesn't, and one has endometriosis and the other has prediabetes. You know, there's a variety of things that will throw off an already complicated hormonal system. And so that's why they don't really research us, because we have too many variables. So, which, you know, shouldn't be an excuse, but it is the reason. So 2016, hardly any research in the literature about female specifically, except for one article that I found where one female who was kind of ahead of the curve with the biohacking community was like, this was my experience. Same thing, hit a wall around week 6, couldn't figure out what was going on, why my body felt like crap after feeling so good for several weeks. And then started to realize that she had to implement a different method of intermittent fasting because she was a naturally cycling female. So for me, even though, you know, I was using this eating style to help myself, you know, kind of trim up my physique a little bit, I was very much into the call a muscle mommy kind of phase where you're just trying to optimize your body, trying to be hardcore, taking pre-workout, doing all the things, no rest days. And so even though I was kind of like unhealthfully in that overhealthy seeming zone, intermittent fasting was like another way for me to try and reach those goals of trying to cut a few more pounds of fat to see a little bit more muscle striations, aka you know, what a lot of people refer to as muscle tone, which is incorrect, but it's okay. That's what people commonly say. So I was like completely mind blown when I learned that, like, okay, follow a crescendo style. So it's 5 days on of your 16-8 eating window, 2 days off of non-restricted eating, because supposedly it helps with the hormones that we fluctuate throughout our cycle. There's a whole lot of different ways nowadays that people have tried to optimize intermittent fasting for females, especially naturally cycling females. But for me, when I discovered that, I was like, okay, cool. So this seems better. So then I started to implement that. I did a little better. But when month 2 or 3 came around, I started to notice that I was having a miserably hard time getting in enough calories and macros. So I've always kind of followed the if it fits your macros kind of eating style. That's why I like to teach foundational macros to you guys, because it has been a game changer for how I understand food to fuel my body for the goals that I have. And I couldn't get enough calories in my 8-hour window. So that was the biggest struggle for me. And as to exactly why I don't follow it to this day as strictly, because I have realized that properly nourishing myself daily and generally falling in a fasted and unfasted period of time every day is giving me the best health that I can have right now compared to being extremely restrictive and being like, crap, I'm 500 calories short, but it's just about to turn 7:30 p.m., you know? And so that is a huge pitfall that I have found for those of us who are active and want to implement intermittent fasting. If you are somebody who is not super active, you maybe all you do is yoga, or maybe all you do is walking, or maybe all you do is like a jog on the treadmill one or two times a week, but otherwise, you know, you don't get very many steps throughout the day. A variety of things where essentially you're under 7,000 steps a day, we'll say 7,500. So if that's you, you probably could do fine with intermittent fasting. If you're somebody who is much more active than that, like I usually get 10 to 15,000 steps a day because I walk my dog 2 to 3 times a day, and I strength train in the gym 3 to 4 times a week, and I do a round of yoga a week, and then sometimes other things. That's a lot more calories necessary for my best health to be fully nourished, where getting around 2,000 to 2,200 calories a day in an 8-hour window is really tough, because especially if you're trying to eat non-calorically dense foods like Pop-Tarts and things, it's super easy if all you eat is junk food. Highly processed food is very calorically dense. But food that's whole and natural and gives your body those nutrients that are essential, like fibers and good quality natural starches and your natural proteins and your healthy fats, that's a lot of volume. You know, it's a lot of food that you have to eat in 8 hours and digest. And so that's the biggest thing that stopped me from following intermittent fasting. But we'll discuss a little bit more here soon on what exactly is intermittent fasting and all that other stuff. But I kind of wanted to start off with my personal experience just so you can kind of hear a little bit of like what happened to me and why. But I'll also kind of break down for you guys here why or how you can do it better, or what you can optimize it for. Or maybe, you know, if you do fall in a category where you should use it as a intervention short term, that would be beneficial. So let's kind of get into more of what is intermittent fasting altogether. And I probably could have started it with saying this before my experience, but we'll just add it now. Intermittent fasting is an eating pattern that cycles between periods of eating and fasting. So fed and unfed. Essentially, instead of focusing on what you're eating, it focuses on when to eat. So common methods include the 16-8, which is called the lean gains method, or fasting for 24 hours once they don't eat anything all day, and they basically just drink water or no calorie beverages. And there's several other types, like the 5-2 diet, alternate day fasting, and time restricted eating by certain hours. So people will mess around with like the 16-8, 10-12, you know, any of those things, which, you know, a lot of people actually land in a natural category where you only eat when you're awake and then you don't eat when you're asleep, right? And then you usually don't eat 2 hours, ideally 3 hours would be better, before you sleep, and then an hour after you wake up. That naturally puts you into a pretty solid unfed window. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense for you, is it's kind of basically a variety of different ways to be fed and unfed in a 24-hour period. So a really important detail that some people don't think about is that essentially if you're using intermittent fasting for what most people try to use it for, weight management or weight loss or fat loss, that's usually achieved because in your total week consumption of calories, if you remove whole day's worth of calories, let's say you're doing that whole 24-hour fast day, one out of the 7 days of your week, you're removing over time a significant amount of calories that will combine into 3,500 calories, which is a pound of fat. So essentially, it's caloric restriction again, but in an eating window. So you're kind of basically dieting in the sense that you're restricting your calories, but you're basically just manipulating how many calories you eat in a day because you only have a certain amount of hours to eat those calories. Okay, hopefully that makes sense. So a lot of times when people think like, oh, intermittent fasting is this magic thing for weight loss, you're actually just more restricting the amount of time you have to eat those calories, which naturally for a lot of people reduces overall calories throughout their week. And it's important to know that you don't gain fat from overeating one day, a culmination of several days out of your week. I believe the shortest amount of time is 72 hours. How much surplus calories you eat versus what you burn can become a pound of fat or so by the end of a week or two. It takes time for that to happen because you can load and eat a bunch of calories one day and then burn off those calories naturally or with specific exercise. You know, this is why people kind of quote unquote carb load before marathons because they need excess energy to store in their body to activate as glucose for energy. And so when you think about like, oh, I overate yesterday, I need to restrict the next day, that's a really common kind of unhealthy way to think about food. People can achieve a similar thing if they do the crescendo style of fasting, the one that I was talking about with my experience, where you do 5 days fasting windows, 2 days relaxed, where if you do have relaxed weekends where you don't hyper restrict, but you don't also binge, but if you just eat as normal on the weekend and then you go back to an eating window, naturally you may be cutting out calories throughout those 5 days of fasting because you are following eating windows and you have to be more intentional about the food you eat. But it's extremely important, especially when discussing the 16-8 method, which is the most common. When you're following that, it's eating parameters. So you have to still eat the total calories and nutrients your body needs every day in that window. It's not better for you to be restricting the food you eat just because you were outside of your window and you can no longer eat. That is a huge misconception because a lot of people, especially clients I've worked with over the years, kind of think of it as a fun game by, oops, I didn't eat enough today. All I fit in was 2 meals because I wasn't hungry by the time my fed window opened. And I see this a ton, especially with women, because they kind of think that they're gaining points in a weird way by not eating. And so again, this is a little bit of a disordered eating mentality where if that comes up for you, I would definitely step back from following this eating method because it is not going to be very healthy for you because you should always be prioritizing nourishment. And nourishment looks like way more calories than many of us are trained to believe. I know so many women who are constantly chronically restricting themselves from food just to stay small, when in reality, if your body is putting on weight because you ate normal 2,000 calories one day, that means that you've been chronically under eating for too long and your body is starved. It's wanting nutrients because you should not be able to put on weight that fast if you are metabolically healthy, aka you've been nourished properly for weeks on end. So that's something that's really important that I want to kind of differentiate because when you are eating in an unfed and fed window pattern, it's not better for you to be restricting what you're getting and how much you're getting and just being like, oops, I'm outside of my window, can't eat anymore, which is exactly why for me with the activity levels and amount of calories I know I need for my body, I just could not stick to that for a lifetime. But I will say that it is a useful trick for managing your total weekly calories for trying to avoid consistent gain when it comes to maintenance. So if you're somebody who wants to be in maintenance and wants the health benefits of eating in windows, which is a much healthier way to go about using intermittent fasting versus just for fat loss or weight loss, that could technically be healthy for somebody who has significant weight to lose and has trouble with snacking and all that kind of stuff. But for those of you who are looking for, you know, the autophagy, because intermittent fasting helps your body basically have a window of time where it's not strictly focused on digesting the food that you put in it. Anytime we eat, our body shifts its focus mainly to digesting that food and sorting that food and then getting rid of that food in your body. When you are in a state where your body is not doing that, your body can sift through, look for damaged DNA, get rid of it, look for any illnesses, get rid of it, you know, all those different things. So that's why our body doesn't actually really want to eat when we're sick, for example. When we have an illness, if you've ever had one in like the really hardcore day one or day two when it's like really hitting you hard and you're like, you know, tea and stuff sounds good, but I just want to sleep. That's because our body is doing something really significant where it doesn't want the distraction of food. So it is actually better for you to be fasted aside from, you know, liquids and nutrients in that sense. When you are dealing with that first day or two where your body is running a fever, trying to kill off the virus, all that kind of stuff. I have always lived my life hardly ever using NyQuil or any of that junk because my body knows exactly what to do. It has an immune system that is far more intelligent than modern day sales, medications, and junk like that. Unless, you know, of course, it's like strep throat where you really need to use an antibiotic for that. But general colds, general flus, and, you know, a variety of those things, your body can fight it without all that junk. You know, give it nutrients that are natural to fight it, and it can do it. So when you are fasting, the unfed window is doing that because every day, regardless of being sick, you know, that's just an extreme example to help you kind of picture it. Every day, our body needs to have that downtime to clear out things that are done, have been used, or are defective. And so this is where it becomes problematic for people who eat all day long because then they basically never let their body get into this like cellular autophagy zone. It's hard to say. And so then you get at higher risk for developing things like cancer and stuff because all cancer is defective DNA. So when that DNA can keep proliferating and making more defective cells, that's when you can see tumors growing and cancer cells spreading, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's really important. And a lot of people follow intermittent fasting because of these, you know, quote unquote, biohacky types of benefits, even though that's not really biohacking. That's actually something that our bodies have always done for centuries beforehand. But we are just at a state of time in our comfortable place here in the US for a majority of us where we can eat everything we want at any time all day long. Whereas before, you know, we'd have an eating meal time. And then there'd be a huge chunk of time where we couldn't eat because food was not available or it wasn't part of, you know, what the tribe's eating patterns and things like that. So that's really important to understand why there's different ways to use intermittent fasting and what it's used for. There's a ton of other benefits and such in the science that I'm not getting into today. I do have a podcast episode on intermittent fasting. I can put it in the show notes for you to go reference or you could just search through the podcast. And it is, you know, talking about even more of the science of intermittent fasting. But for my personal experience, I found that the 16-8 was great, but I'm more of a 10-14 eating style girl. So for me, I have a 10-hour eating window, and then I have like a 14-hour chunk where I'm unfed. And that naturally works really well for me, helps my blood sugar stay really balanced and healthy. And, you know, I've tracked my blood work 3 separate times in 2024 as I've been on this kind of healing journey for my hormones. And the last 2 blood draws, I had very healthy reestablished fasting blood sugar again and fasting insulin and all that, which is very important. And my A1C went down. So there's a lot of positive things that are happening. I'm going to be sharing an episode soon on the quote unquote aftermath of my slow girl season, as well as other hormone therapies and things like that that I've been implementing to try to get myself in a healthier state. But when it comes to intermittent fasting, I do follow a natural eating method or window. But I would say that for me, I would not follow a 16-8 again personally because it just was a little too restrictive and I need more nourishment throughout the day personally. But again, if you're somebody who doesn't burn a lot of calories throughout the day and you are struggling with, you know, blood sugar roller coasters and a variety of excess fat or whatnot, it could be a strategic thing for you to implement for at least like 8 to 12 weeks perhaps. But again, check with your practitioner if you have any other known diseases or you're pregnant or any of those things. You should probably always check most things with your practitioner if you're pregnant, especially. So a couple of misconceptions I would say that a lot of people get from when it comes to intermittent fasting would be, like I had said, one of the common ones is people say like you'll starve yourself. So fasting doesn't mean starving. Again, you need to be eating enough food in that window to achieve your daily needs. In a really good total daily energy expenditure calculator is actually linked in my nutrition labels ebook, the free downloadable I have on my Stand store as well as on my website. So if you want a quick link to that, I would definitely recommend that downloadable as well. It's a lot of really great information that is super important, especially right now because we are seeing more and more movement in our government trending towards better labels and better transparency from companies that have been, you know, quite frankly, poisoning us for a while with different food additives that they've been trying to pass off as safe and that there's no research saying that it does this or that. But then now people are saying, okay, yes, food dyes are causing these issues. This or that is in our fluoride is actually linked to lower IQ in children. Yes, to this and that and this and that. So get ahead of it, learn how to read nutrition labels, and you can have that free downloadable like in seconds from the links in the show notes. But there's also a total daily energy expenditure calculator that is linked in that I highly recommend you use, because knowing how many calories you need every day is the first step to being well nourished every day. And if you're somebody who struggles with hormone imbalances, low energy, or lethargy, all these different, you know, challenges, you may not be eating consistently the nutrients you need every day. So this is really important to understand and know, because, you know, again, most of us girlies have been raised in a society that teaches us to just undereat constantly. And then you end up with hypothyroidism, excess body fat in areas that is unusual, like cortisol belly fat or PCOS, you know, a whole lot of these different things are definitely influenced by our lifestyles and our eating patterns. And mostly it's because we are doing it haphazardly and wishy-washy all the time. So highly recommend you check in on that for yourself. But that is one thing that I would say is definitely misconstrued when it comes to intermittent fasting, is that it doesn't mean that you're starving. You're not fasting to starve. I know a lot of us think of fasting as like biblical terms, back when they would just stop eating altogether to have a kind of divine moment. But that is not what intermittent fasting is. A lot of people say like, oh, it's a fad diet, or, you know, it's the best way to lose weight. Fad diet wise, you know, some aspects of it were, a lot of things were turned into a fad diet around intermittent fasting because people took it as an opportunity to like publish their version of intermittent fasting and try to make their community for this or that, and sales, you know, classic capitalism. So yes, those things are kind of fad diety, but like a 16-8, a 10-14, a full day fast one time a week, you know, that's actually something that people have been doing for, again, centuries naturally, centrally is intentional. So that's something that I would say is kind of definitely a misconception, is that like, even though you guys saw it very aggressively across social media the last 5-10 years, it is still not something that is just a fad diet. It's actually just an eating style that helps a lot of people kind of manage their eating so that they can benefit from, you know, the things like the cellular autophagy and other stuff like that. So is it the best way to lose weight? I would say not necessarily. I would definitely say usually not. If you're somebody who struggles, again, with like blood sugar imbalances or too much snacking, you know, or proper meal preparation as far as like how much you eat, it will expose you to, if you're not eating enough, because in your outside of your eating windows, you'll be super hungry. And so that'll also kind of be feedback, pun intended, that you are not feeding enough. So is it the best way to lose weight? No, I would say definitely not, even though it can assist in caloric restriction for people who struggle with those things I just spoke about. However, I would say it's not my first place I ever go with majority, especially of my female clients between the ages of 20 and 60. I'm not a huge fan of it usually, for a lot of those reasons, other than, you know, people who do struggle with like late night snackies and things like that, because that will definitely mess with your sleep quality, with your blood sugar at night, which is what influences your sleep quality being poor. And it can unintentionally increase your calories because, you know, you're adding in at the end of a full day of eating more calories. So that would be a scenario where maybe it can help you, but I don't think at all it is the best way to achieve weight loss or fat loss. And I would say for sure for me, when I experienced it, I did not have significantly more or higher quality fat loss because of it. I would say mainly it was the blood sugar benefits that I achieved that really helped me. That's probably the main thing I saw out of it all. A lot of people say that fasting slows your metabolism. Yeah, not true at all. So I would say that like short-term fasting can actually boost your metabolism more slightly due to the increases in your norepinephrine. Those levels can be slightly increased when you do short-term fasting. So like the crescendo dieting can actually help boost your metabolism when you are using it strategically. However, like prolonged and extreme caloric restrictions, so like multi-full day fasts and things like that, or just 800 calories every single day, but you're supposed to be naturally cycling at the same time, like that can take a toll on your metabolism over time because your metabolism responds to what your body needs for survival. So if your body is trying to essentially keep you alive, that's its goal, right? Survival. And you are chronically underfeeding it, it's gonna get really efficient with that very small amount of calories, which means it moves that metabolic set point lower and lower and lower. This is where people hit plateaus when they're dieting, for example. And then all of a sudden, you go out for a birthday dinner, you eat like 3,000 calories easily, and suddenly your weight goes up really fast. Well, that's because your metabolism is set at 800 calories and it read that as a surplus. And any type of surplus to your body at that point is nutrients it wants to save because it's been chronically underfed. So this is, again, where understanding your total daily energy expenditure can help you better understand what metabolically, how many calories your body actually really wants and will thrive at, okay? So this is why you cannot use something like IF to just chronically restrict your calories. And if you are a female listening right now and you eat under like 1600 calories a day and you're a grown-ass woman, you are under eating and you definitely need to do your calculator to figure out where you need to be and then slowly increase your calories weekly, maybe 50 calories a week or so intentionally to get yourself to that happy metabolic point. You might see the scale go up maybe a pound or two, but do not freak out. That's most likely water weight that's going on. And then your body will balance back out, especially when it's healthy. A lot of my female clients, when we get them to a healthier caloric zone, which is usually around 1800 to 2000 calories minimum, their body actually starts to shed excess fat and put on happy muscle. Your body cannot really put on muscle if you don't give it any of the building blocks in excess to build. So your body has lean muscle. It's going to take whatever protein and stuff you give it right now to maintain that lean muscle. But to build extra means you need extra protein. So you need more calories. So anybody who's trying to put on lean muscle but is still under eating under like 1600 calories, you're not going to be able to because your body literally can't build something out of nothing. Okay. So when it comes to kind of thinking about it, slowing your metabolism just because you're restricting your windows, definitely not true. That is definitely a misconception. And, you know, extreme caloric restriction over time will damage your metabolism and is not something I ever recommend anybody do for much longer, especially if you have situations like hypothyroid-like numbers or, you know, hairs falling out, skin looks dull and kind of crepey and wrinkly, you know, all those different things. There's a lot of things, brittle nails, excess belly fat. Those are all signs that something is not right. And it typically is because you're underfed and you've been chronically underfeeding yourself. So look into that. Check it out. A little bit of a caveat, but similarly related to this conversation. And then I guess the last misconception that I want to kind of discuss about intermittent fasting is that people say breakfast, you should not skip it. It's unhealthy. Yes and no. I would say, you know, this one I've always gone back and forth with because I remember the day somebody asked me that when I was in my early career at LA Fitness and one of my male clients was like, I think he actually had started fasting and he was like, I skip breakfast and I start eating at this time and blah, 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 blah. And at the time, I was like, the standard phrase like from the FDA was like, do not skip breakfast. It's the best first meal of your day. And for me personally, yes, I cannot skip breakfast because I am hungry in the morning and it benefits my hormones as a cycling female to eat breakfast in the morning. However, for some people, especially males, I would say you totally can skip breakfast as long as, again, you get enough calories that your body needs for your entire day in the next several meals. So some guys do like two giant meals. Some guys do one giant meal. Frankly, one giant meal, I've never seen somebody get all the calories they need for their day in that one single meal. That's really complicated and intentional. And most people who follow that usually will be like, and I eat a burrito. And it's like, yeah, burritos can have quite a bit of calories, but the nutrient balance is typically far off. It's usually very high in fat, very high in carb, moderate to low in protein, and, you know, just lower quality nutrients overall. So if, you know, you're somebody who is skipping a meal, but then making worse choices overall, net, that is not going to be a good strategy because you're going to be robbing your body from nutrients that it needs for the day. So the breakfast thing is kind of, it's unique again to each individual person. So I don't think that that is always something that is, you know, very strictly always bad for you, but more often than not, it can be less ideal for more people, especially speaking to, you know, my naturally cycling females who are not menopausal yet. But for those who are menopausal, you know, a lot of these things can apply to you. They can be a good way for you to try to balance your blood sugar while you're going through menopause, because our body is going through a huge shift during that time. And it's one of those things that can be very, again, unique to the individual. So a 16-8 eating style when you are menopausal can actually be a really good strategy and can help manage a lot more of those hormonal changes and, you know, blood sugar changes to try to help you manage your body composition and energy as much as possible. But, you know, it is again, very nuancey. And so it's not easy to predict and give perfect blanket statements on it. So you kind of have to explore your own unique situation with, you know, hopefully a good practitioner that cares about you and wants your best chances coming out of menopause as well. All right, so before we close out this episode, I had put up a Q&A on my Instagram page about some of the general questions that some of you guys had around intermittent fasting and a little bit more of, you know, how it related to my personal experience following it for a while. So one of the questions that was asked was, what was a typical day of eating? So I luckily was, like I said, a little bit anal at the time, and I can still access all of my MyFitnessPal record diary entries from that chapter of my life. That's kind of the funny thing of the archiving of MyFitnessPal for those of you who have used it over the years yourself. So I went back and I looked at it. In a typical thing that I would eat was I would start with this kind of pre-made oatmeal, protein oatmeal powder, because I was, my dad had a family friend who had this amazing, or has, I think she still sells it, Tony's Oats. And it was, my favorite one was the blueberries and cream. It was like a vanilla protein powder with oats and dried blueberries and some flax seeds and stuff. And so that was a really easy thing for me to make because I was like, go, go, go. I was in the hustle phase. I was full-time training, full roster of clients at LA Fitness while doing full-time college and, you know, trying to have a personal life at the same time. So ease of access was the best thing for me. So I started the day with that, which I think was roughly like 25 or 30 grams of protein total, solid amount of carbs, probably not enough fats when I look back at it. And then I would prep meals and I would make it more simple where I would just steam a bunch of rice and I would either slow cooker chicken or I'd make like ground turkey pasta with like one of the organic garlic sauces, pasta sauces from Trader Joe's. And I would mix in like spinach or some sort of veggies. And I would use like brown rice penne pasta or something like that. And so that was usually what my lunch was. And maybe a Quest bar for a dessert treat. I used to do this thing where I'd get the cookie dough Quest bar and I would heat it up for like 10 seconds in the microwave and I'd put some peanut butter on top. Super bomb. I can't believe it's so funny because I was eating so consistently the same for so long that it's like burned in my memory and it almost feels like cringy. And then for dinner, I would either eat a variation of that or I'd make myself like a homemade like Thai curry with chicken or something like that. But, you know, rice was honestly a huge staple for me. It always has been. It always will be. I like rice. My body likes rice. We good. So it's one of those things where that was usually my day of eating. It did not incorporate a whole ton of, like, I've never been much of a super snacky person. I can always tell when my cortisol is out of whack when I am being a snacky person, and or my meals are not substantial enough, which is leading me to snack in between those meals. So that's always a sign that your meals need to be bigger and more substantial if you find yourself wanting or needing something in the in-between hours of your day, if you are a three-meal-a-day person. So when I was intermittent fasting, it was kind of essential that I meal prepped those things so that I could get that in. However, I will never forget one of the more experienced older trainers at that gym who was a dude. He was a well-experienced weightlifter. He had done powerlifting at one point, did some bodybuilding at one point, was very experienced with the whole food, calories in, calories out, necessary, all that junk. And he looked at my food one day and was just like, "Is that all you're eating for lunch?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, he looked at me, gave me like an up down, and then was like, "You are wildly under eating. You're probably limiting your gains because of how little you're eating." And then he like walked away. I remember being like kind of like shook for a second because I was just like, how rude, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then like, and when I look back at it, like, yeah, I definitely was. I would say that those meals, I probably was prepping myself only around like 350, 400 calories. So two of those a day, 800 plus my breakfast, which was under 300 calories. That's only like 1,300, 1,400 calories a day was definitely not enough. So even when I was adding in, you know, protein bars, when I started doing that, that's when I was macro counting, and that's how I better understood just how much food I need for the day. So that's where, you know, all of that comes into play. You know, you can mix in following macros with intermittent fasting, but you may find that your body needs so much more and you cannot simply get enough calories in that eating window. Several of my clients who have had really good success initially with intermittent fasting then found as they wanted to add more muscle or, you know, increase their daily calories because they didn't like being in a deficit zone prolonged, which is good. You should not be there prolonged. They were just like, "I just can't eat enough. Like, there's no way I can eat enough." And I'm like, yeah, exactly. So you don't have to follow intermittent fasting anymore. Like you don't have to. It can be a tool. So for me, I would say that that's pretty much how my meals look throughout the day, with a little bit of extra commentary in there. But it is something where like it can be helpful with busy schedules. That was another question actually somebody asked, how does it fit in with busy schedules? It, you know, it can, but only if you prep. So it only worked with my schedule because I had a very consistent routine of simple meals that generally got the nutrients I needed prepped. And I brought my little lunchbox. I knew exactly where the microwaves were because luckily, you know, I was up in Oregon. So there was a New Seasons that was right next to the LA Fitness I worked at in Tualatin. So it was easy for me to just pop over and heat up my food. And I would eat it in that little, they had a little like kind of seated cafe section. I'd eat it and then I'd come back. My lifestyle back then was so specific. Like I had so many routines that were like because I sought out the easiest way to achieve that. But I was also in college. I did not have a family. Like there were so many things that it just would not work well with. So if you are somebody who has a very, you know, complicated or complex schedule that changes constantly day to day because you have children or you have a specific job that takes you traveling, you know, I would say intermittent fasting is complicated. I'd say that it's not the easiest thing to do for your health. But I will say a caveat on that is one of my male clients, when we were implementing intermittent fasting and he would have to occasionally travel for work, on those travel days, there was no way he could get in like enough calories and good quality calories. So we actually found for him, again, as a male with non-fluctuating hormones, did really well to actually just do a whole day fast on that travel business day, because they would always feed them really crappy food in the meetings and all that kind of stuff. And airport food is getting a little better depending on the airport you go to, but generally not so good. And so that was the strategy that worked really well for him. So, you know, if you're a male listening to this or you're a menopausal female, that could be a strategy that could work for you. But generally, I would say it's not the easiest to fit in with a busy schedule. And I don't think I would super recommend it because it is just, it's very complicated. You have to be so intentional. But if you're somebody who is super intentional, then go for it. Try it. And then another last question that somebody asked that was a good one was, did it affect your hormones? Yes. So that is exactly why the Crescendo eating style is kind of the only way I'd recommend it for premenopausal females, is because it does mess with your hormones, because you do need different ratios of nutrients throughout your cycle. You need a lot more carbs when you're in your luteal phase. That's why you might feel yourself craving carbs. Your body is intelligent. It's telling you something. Listen to it. And in intermittent fasting, you know, it messes with our hormones in the way that it kind of, you know, especially if you're eating the same exact stuff every day in the same windows, but your body may want a little bit more in the latter half of your cycle. You know, if you don't give it those 2 days off where the blood sugar can kind of, you know, have a few days of break, you will struggle with imbalanced hormones when you hit that usually week 4 through 6. It's kind of basically after you go through a full cycle following strict intermittent fasting and then going into your next cycle. So if you are somebody who wants to try intermittent fasting, I would do the 5-2, 5 days following a 16-8 or a 10-14, and then do 2 days where you're not paying attention to the hours at all. And that, again, that does not mean binge or any of those crazy things. That just means relax yourself and eat naturally through the windows that kind of happen. But I will say, to kind of finish out this chat, some interesting things that I discovered with fasting that I did in tandem would be, I ran a blood sugar test for myself to kind of see how it influenced my blood sugar through different things. So I discovered, and I think I still have the sheet somewhere where I wrote it down. I did this very, like, there were no easy access CGMs back then or any of that stuff. It was all just the classic prick your finger and stick it in the little machine. And which was so much fun, pricking yourself like multiple times a day for a couple of weeks. But I did find that intermittent fasting vastly improved my fasting blood sugar. Shocker, not so shocker. So that was really great to see my fasting blood sugar closer to the 80s, the mid 80s to high 80s at the time. Now I'm more in the low 80s currently, but back when I had done this back in 2016. And that would be if I ate all my normal meals throughout the day and had normal sleep, no alcohol, no other things like that. When I had alcohol, my fasting blood sugar every morning was always in the 90s at least, sometimes in the hundreds. So something I found to be really interesting was even just one glass of red wine was going to throw off my blood sugar for the next morning. So this is an exact example as to why alcohol really doesn't have a place with any, you know, longevity with health and sleep quality, because it impairs our sleep quality. It keeps our blood sugar spiked high. It keeps our system trying to process out this toxin, and it takes time. It burdens our liver. There's so many things where consistent or casual alcohol consumption really can sabotage your health over time. And I am definitely a walking example of that, because even though I generally uphold the most healthy lifestyle factors, ever since my grandmother passed several years ago, I was partaking in more casual drinking consistently. I mean, you guys, if you've listened to my podcast episodes, you've heard this before. But last year, my husband and I both cut our drinking back, you know, outside of the fact that we had wedding events that were kind of spread out throughout the year, like the bachelorette, the wedding ceremony in Hawaii, and then the wedding celebration in California. Those were exceptions. But even through that, like, I didn't actually drink that much. I can't say the same for him, but I can say that between all of those months and weeks in between, we cut back our drinking to maybe 1 or 2 a month. We would frequently skip entire weeks without alcohol. And I was starting to feel so much better. And I knew it was something I needed to do to really repair my hormone imbalances that were very exacerbated last year. They were made very obvious to me by the symptoms I was experiencing. And some of those are correlated to next week's episode. So I definitely want you guys to stay tuned for the carnivore discussion, because I've got some very interesting insights for you guys on that one. But I will say, this year, one of my 2025 resolutions was to cut back my alcohol to basically 1 every 2 months, maybe even 3 months. Basically just saving it for extremely specific scenarios, and not casually doing it as frequently, because there just really is no place for alcohol in our bodies, especially as young females, especially if you have fertility goals in the near future, and especially if, you know, you want to maintain as much youth and vitality physically and mentally. So I highly recommend you guys, you know, I know that that sounds like a boring Betty thing to say, but as one of the influences on your health, if you're listening to Rebel Wellness, I would definitely say it's really important for you to consider cutting back your alcohol as much as possible and try to find ways to transfer that stress management into other things. And there's so many great things. So maybe I'll make another episode on some of that and the progress with that later this year. But with that said, I hope that that kind of experience with all my intermittent fasting discussion helped you guys better understand it. And if you have any other specific questions for me or things that I did not cover, please shoot me a DM at Rebel Wellness Podcast on Instagram or at Kaylee Loren. I would love to answer them and chat with you guys, especially if you're experiencing something. Maybe you're doing intermittent fasting right now and you're wondering if what you're experiencing is related and how to troubleshoot it. You know, don't feel afraid to reach out. I am a very friendly person and I usually help a little too much sometimes. So if you want some help, I am here for you. But I will remind you guys, definitely be very intentional about if you decide to follow intermittent fasting. It can be tricky for some of you, especially if you are somebody who has a past with an eating disorder or anything like that. But again, you know, make the decision that is the best for yourself, as well as, you know, a discussion that you have with whoever is in your professional healthcare team. All right, Rebel, that's it for today's episode. Share this episode to your Instagram story or with a friend who might be trying intermittent fasting or thinking about it. But as always, celebrate your strength and nourishment. Walk with confidence. I'll catch you next week on another episode of Rebel Wellness. What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do it yourself. In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live. So stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand curated, not AI generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter sign up. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So all right, Rebel, until next episode.